This is Rays Radio.
And the first pitch, Evan launched a deep left field. This one's on its way, and how far will it go? A massive homer for Evan Longoria, and the Rays take a 1-0 lead.
Welcome to Countdown to Opening Day.
Here's a swing and a high fly ball. Left center field. Jennings back at the wall. Jumps up and makes the catch. He took away a home run.
Coming up, we bring you the inside scoop from Rays players, coaches, and front office executives as the Rays prep for the 2015 season.
Swinging a ground ball to third. Evan on a tough in-between hop has it. Throws across and the Rays have swept the Red Sox.
Now, to get you ready for opening day, here are the voices of the Rays, Andy Freed and Dave Wills.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome into our final edition of the 2015 version of Countdown to Opening Day. Along with Andy Freed, I am Dave Wills, and we are inside the Hooters in Clearwater Beach. We're back, well, kind of home. We're on the shores of Clearwater Beach here. It's another beautiful day for some of the spring breakers and some of the other folks who are enjoying against the more spectacular Florida weather. Along with Andy Freed, I'm Dave Wills. And again, we'll hear from Chris Archer, Rays pitcher, who started today's game in, against the Phillies in just a little bit. We'll also hear from Heim Bloom, the baseball operations vice president, and also Mitch Lukovic, who will join us as well a little bit later on. He's in charge of the Rays farm system. And Andy Freed, again, the Rays go into Clearwater today and really set the tone with a nice, 10-1 win over the Phillies. I know a Phillies team that a lot of people don't see winning a lot of games, but Chris Archer was good in his two innings of start. Nathan Carnes looked okay as well. But the offense coming alive today. And Desmond hit the ball hard again. But we saw David DeJesus go yard and Kevin Kiermaier with a triple.
DeJesus hit a three-run homer and then left. That's all he needed to do. His work was done for the day. There were three guys to me that really stood out offensively today. And the first one being Tim Beck, who has already looked very good defensively, whether it be at short or second, more second lately for the Rays. Beckham today was at second base once again. He had a couple of hits and hit the ball hard, and a couple of them with two strikes. Looked very, very comfortable, and he's one of those guys right now. He looks like a big leaguer. You know, the question is, you know, he only played, 16 or so games a year ago, and he had the knee injury and various other things, but maybe the time has come for Tim Beckham. It's easy to believe when you see the way he played baseball today. Jake Elmore hit the ball very hard today, and Logan Forsythe, towards the end of spring training year, is hitting the ball better. And if you look at what he did last year when he was at his hottest, well, it was when he was playing more every day. And he's going to be playing a little more every day for the Rays. And if those three guys start to hit, you start to think things might fall into place a little bit.
And you can only hope. I mean, again, everybody knows that that one of the big question marks coming in to the 2015 season is going to be the offense. And Evan was in the lineup today, but then was taken out of the lineup, battling a little bit of a cold today. And again, he said this were the regular season he'd be playing, but doesn't want to risk anything like dehydration or anything like that. So, again, he's been swinging the bat fine, so it's not like he needs some more at-bats. But when you look at this Rays team, again, the questions are around their offense. But as there's still, as we say, 4 days left until opening day, 3 days until they have to get the opening day roster in. And right now the big questions are still backup catcher. I mean, Bobby Wilson and Casale have been doing some great things behind the plate and decent things next to it. And Kurt's done a nice job. We saw what he could do last year when he was with the team. And then wondering how they're going to still kind of fill out that bullpen. There's still, about three spots available and probably five or six guys battling for it.
And, you know, in some spring trainings, I start to feel like I've got an idea. Now, it doesn't mean that it's right, but a lot of times I start to get a sense, okay, this guy, I think maybe they're leaning this way roster-wise. These are the implications. Do they make this move? I'm with Kevin Cash. I think this is going right down to the wire. The Rays have been really not hedging their letting anyone really know publicly what's going on. I don't have a great feel
really
on the way. Not that they ever do anyway, but I think it could go a number of ways right now. You know, it's not always as simple as, well, this guy's only 40-man, this guy's a non-roster. You know, the other thing that we haven't even mentioned yet, a couple of minutes into the show, is that the Rays just traded for another pitcher, and Erasmo Ramirez is going to be joining the Rays and pretty likely going to be step right into the rotation. Maybe his first time in a Rays uniform is going to be on the mound making an appearance here within the next couple of days, whether it be in the number four spot. So the one thing we have learned this week is that, of course, Archer was starting opening day. We do know now Nathan Carnes, who pitched six very good innings of relief today, will go in game two. Jake Odorizzi will go in game three, which would lead one to believe that Erasmo Ramirez would go in game four, even though that hasn't officially been announced. But there's many minute decisions, and that deadline is coming. And you're right, 4 days until opening day, but less than that for decision time.
And I get the feeling again, I don't want to sit there and try to figure out why this guy's number one. We know Archer from his body of work last year. We'll talk to Chris about it in a little while here on our second or third segment, actually, a little bit later on in the show about his thoughts on the 2014 season. But, you know, you start wondering, right, why is Nathan Carnes second and not Jake Odorizzi, who was the winningest pitcher on the Rays? Again, it has something to do with matchups, not only the first time through, but maybe the second and even third time through. And if you think back to last year, Nathan Carnes looks like he'd be lined up then to pitch against the Toronto Blue Jays, I believe. We all know what he did against the Blue Jays in his debut with the Rays last season.
And in Toronto, which is where it would be once again. And, you know, it's easy to sit back and say, okay, well, they think this guy's the best pitcher, so he'll pitch one. This guy's the second best pitcher, he'll pitch. That's not really much that goes into it at all. And especially with the fact, too, that 25 of the first 28 games are against the American League East. So you could build up a little equity within the division, or you could really kind of put yourself behind that proverbial eight ball, which you really don't want to do. And then towards the end of the month, that's when it looks like we may get back some of the guys that we were hoping would be in the rotation from the beginning. You know, Alex Colome's been throwing the baseball around a little bit. Drew Smyly has been getting closer and closer. Apparently looked very good in a bullpen session yesterday, and met more later on in the year. But you know, Alex Cobb, I haven't gotten a great sense yet on when he's going to be back, but it sure seems at this point that Smyly and Colome would return before Alex Cobb, who might be a little bit later.
That's again, we don't know. We haven't really been able to get a whole lot of insight in that, although, as you said, Drew Smyly threw yesterday. He came off the mound with high fives and smiles, and that's always a very good sign. Well, you know, as you start to break down the American League East, you start to wonder, all right, well, who's the odds-on favorite for the division? And we've had a chance to see almost every team within the division a couple times now, and it's really hard to see who's going to separate themselves. Again, we'll see Baltimore right away in the season opener on Monday, but you know, the Orioles are dealing with a couple of injuries now themselves, and they've got to get beyond that to their everyday players. The Red Sox lose Christian Vasquez to a Tommy John surgery, and he was supposed to be their stalwart behind home plate. He was going to be the guy that was probably going to catch a majority of the time, was a run stopper, was a great thrower. He's out now for the season with Tommy John surgery. The Yankees are dealing with a couple of dings here and there, and the Blue Jays, well, you wonder what's going on with them. I mean, again, they're a situation where, are they going to finally get it done? I mean, I look at this American League East, and it's hard for me to see who's going to separate themselves. And you just got to hope that if the Rays can survive the month of April and then get healthy, especially the pitching staff, and avoid any big injuries to anybody else, the Rays should be right in the mix all the way through September.
Every year there is one team that, for whatever reason, the stars seem to align for. And who will that be this year? That is a big blow for the Red Sox in losing Vasquez. That means now that their starting catcher and the guy that's going to catch the lion's share of their games is Ryan Hannigan, who we know last year with the Rays.
And can he do it?
And can he do it? Can he physically do it? We were talking over the weekend when we were playing them. If you play him 3-4 days in a row, he may start to break down a little bit. So they had to go out and trade for Sandy Leon, another catcher, to be his backup. So their catching situation is in total flux. I do like their rotation. I mean, it's a veteran rotation. Porcello, we saw him be incredibly good against the Rays last year, and we saw the Rays thrash him on Sunday Night Baseball. Wade Miley can be very good. He's been in the Rays before. So, I mean, on and on it goes. Which Clay Buchholz is the real Clay Buchholz ever going to stand up? We don't know. I still think the Orioles are the team to beat because they won 96 games. I don't think they're a 96-win Oriole team anymore, but I think they're good. And the thing with the Blue Jays, I think they're taking a real risk right now in their bullpen with adding Miguel Castro and Roberto Osuna, who may be very good at the outset, but these are A-ball pitchers, folks, guys that are throwing in the upper 90s. We'll see you in June and September and see if those guys can last. Maybe they will. I could be as wrong as I can be. But and by the way, Dylan Betances is throwing 92 miles an hour. That's it. And has not had a good spring at all for the Yankees. If he fails his closer and if he doesn't repeat what he did last year, Yankees may have some bullpen problems too.
We're talking baseball here on the beach. We're on Clearwater Beach at the Hooters on Clearwater Beach. Again, people filing in for the dinner for their post-sunburn buffet here as they come in and check out the Hooters here on Clearwater Beach. Come on by. We're here till 8 o'clock. We'll be joining again. We've had a chance to pre-tape a few interviews. So, again, it's just Andy and I here. That's all you get a chance to see if you want to try and come on down here today. But we got the delectable delights here of Hooters. We've already partook in grouper sandwich, Mr. Fried? And I
grouper sandwich.
The buffalo chicken sandwich. We've got a couple of cold Bud Lights working here as well. So come on down. We're here till 8 o'clock. We got Tiger fans, Rays fans. We got all kinds of fans here ready to talk baseball till 8 o'clock. We come back, we'll take a break after this, and then we will hear from some of the guys behind the scenes in the Rays Baseball Operations Department. That and more coming up here on your Countdown to Opening Day show on 620 WDAE and the Rays Radio Network.
Oh.
Opening day, folks, it is literally right around the corner. Join us Monday, April 6th, when the Rays take on the Baltimore Orioles, the first game of the 2015 season. Get your tickets now to experience all the fun and excitement of opening day. Visit RaysBaseball.com or call 888-FAN-RAYS.
Had a chance to catch up with the Rays Vice President of Baseball Operations, Heim Bloom, yesterday, and after a very busy offseason, I'm sure he was looking forward to a more sedate spring training, but because of injuries to some key personnel, that unfortunately was not the case.
Well, thanks for having me. Really appreciate it. And you're right. We always hope for an uneventful spring, and somehow there's usually something that happens. By and large, we were really happy with how spring training went. Obviously, we were integrating a new manager, some changes in the front office, a lot of new players. The vibe in camp was tremendous. Everybody communicated really well, I think better than ever. And there's a lot of optimism and a lot of willingness and a lot of desire to go prove a lot of the doubters wrong. At the same time, the main thing you hope out of spring training is to get out of it unscathed, and we certainly didn't. And we had some of our pitchers in particular get nicked up, which is unfortunate. But overall, we were really happy with how spring went.
But timing is everything. And, I mean, it could have been just like it was last year where the pitchers made it through spring training unscathed, and then 1 week, 2 weeks into the season, we start losing, 40-60% of our starting rotation. So I guess in some terms, as I've been telling people, I'm ready for the regular season. But at the other end of things, I was glad that some of those guys who did get hurt did it when they did, because now instead of missing 6 or 8 weeks during the season, they missed 6 or 8 weeks of spring training and maybe a week or two of the regular season.
No doubt. If it has to happen, you'd always prefer as much of that downtime as possible to take place when the games don't count in the standings. And so from that respect, we were fortunate. We also feel fortunate that none of these looks to be a real long-term injury.
When you look at the way spring training went, again, a lot of the big question marks around this team was the offense. And, I think most people think that this team is going to be able to pitch it. I think that this team is much improved defensively than they were a year ago. But now the question is, and probably always will this team hit? And it seemed like they started to peak offensively toward the right time. Guys seem to be swinging the bats a little bit better now than they were at the beginning of the spring.
Yeah, I think it can be tough in spring training because it's so rare that you have what really is your A lineup all out on the field at the same time, because you're trying to get certain players are established and you're trying to get them ready for the season. You're trying to give some other guys a look. You have off days scheduled for different guys at different times, so you don't necessarily get that 1 through 9 really flowing like we hope it will flow in the regular season. And that was something that we paid attention to this offseason was, we'd all obviously all like to have those big bats that can just bludgeon the opposition into submission, but those guys are hard to come by. And
they're expensive.
They are expensive. And we're hoping that, although we have optimism about what some of the guys in the middle of our lineup are going to do, that we also manage to build a deeper lineup where there's going to be fewer easy outs and make it easier to keep rallies going and keep innings going.
I'm Bloom, Vice President of Baseball Operations, joining us on our Countdown to Opening Day show. I'm Dave Wills, and Andy Fried will be back with us here in just a couple of moments. But, Heim, when you look at spring, and it's usually an opportunity, too, to look at some young players. And, again, the Rays farm system, for better, for worse, whatever, it was a big reason why the Rays became the Rays. In 08, 10, we started looking at the banners. 11 and 13 is when the Rays got to the postseason because of some of the fruits of the labor, bringing those guys up through the system. Hit a little bit of a roadblock, but that happens when you bring all those guys up, it seems, and end up drafted toward the back of the pack. But there were some shrewd trades made toward the end of last season, some trades made by Matt and you guys during this particular offseason. And we've got some nice young guys that I think a lot of people should be keeping an eye on as they check what's going on down in the minors.
We made it a priority this winter, and even going back to the trade deadline last year, given the situation we were in at that time, we made it a priority to restock our system and just restock with young talent. We're always going to live or die based on that young talent coming through the system, and we saw an opportunity to bring more into the system while still staying competitive at the major league level. So we were able to add a number of exciting players through trades. Some of them we got to see a little bit in major league camp. Obviously, Daniel Robertson, our main piece in the Ben Zobrist deal, turning some heads with the way he did in major league camp. And some of those guys spent most of their time out on the backfields, and it was really good to get a look at them as well.
Yeah, Willie Adames, one of those guys I'm sure a lot of people are going to be keeping an eye on as well. He was picked up in the Tiger trade. One other guy that kind of got lost a little bit, he was a first-round pick a few years ago, and it looked like he made himself. He said to himself that he made a commitment this past offseason to be a better player, to get himself into better shape. Richie Schaefer, I thought, made quite an impression as well this spring.
Richie made a really good impression. He came in considerably stronger and spent a ton of time, put a ton of effort into getting that way this offseason. I think it's interesting for a lot of these players as they go through the minor league season. It's not even as long as the major league season, but it's by far longer than the other seasons they've played. And in some of our affiliates, especially the places Richie has been, Port Charlotte and Montgomery, and those leagues are really hot. And you're playing outdoors all the time, and it's smoking out there. So it wears you down, and it's hard to keep your body going the whole season. And, you know, that was one thing that Richie made a priority. He also made some adjustments at the end of last year, and it paid off at the way he finished the season, came into spring training, picking up where he left off. This guy has big power and a chance to really, you know, he's one of those guys that can put the ball in the seats. And we're looking forward to seeing what he does when the lights go on.
And saw what he did at third base. And there might be a guy that might be standing in front of him at third base for a couple of years in Evan Longoria. But what he did in a couple of spring games over there at the hot corner was rather impressive as well. All right. Chaim Bloom, our vice president of baseball operations, joining us here. And again, Chaim, you came on as an intern. I mean, let's go back a few years as coming on as an intern. I mean, going through college, you know, there's no such thing as majoring in baseball or sabermetrics. I mean, when did it click? When did you start thinking that you might want to be part of a baseball front office?
Well, I had always been passionate about baseball from a really young age, and also from a really young age, it was apparent that if I was ever going to get to the big leagues, it was not going to be on the field. I wasn't blessed with that kind of talent. And it was as I got into college and started along my path there that I realized that baseball operations and working in a front office and helping to build an organization was something that I really wanted to do and where I wanted to direct that passion. And a lot of hard work, a lot of phone calls and emails and letters. I was fortunate enough to get some opportunities along the way, including here as an intern and get a chance to get a foot in the door.
So now, after getting that foot in the door, you worked your way up. Now you're a vice president of baseball operations along with Eric Neander and now the baseball president of baseball operations, Matt Silverman. You guys really worked to kind of redo this team. I mean, again, this is a team that didn't have a whole lot wrong with it. Yes, they won 77 games, but as I've kind of looked back, I mean, we didn't hit. We know that. We didn't pitch as well as we usually do, and we definitely didn't catch it. And yet somehow, some way, this team still won 77 games. So it wasn't like you had to do a complete do-over, but as I said many times, it's almost like you just had to hit the refresh button because the core is pretty good, but you just had to maybe get rid of a few viruses and maybe a few other things that are kind of hanging around.
Yeah, after a year like last year where we felt we came into the year with such high expectations and it just really didn't come together. And we spent a lot of time, and many of our guys in the office spent an incredible amount of time and effort really digging in and seeing you know, what was real, what was kind of fluky, and, you know, we don't ever want to overreact, but we also can never be complacent. And that's the same whether we win 77 or 97. We always got to look ahead and try to stay out in front of things because we know that even if you're successful, you've got a target on your back and the rest of the industry is going to try and catch up. So we put a lot of effort into figuring out what do we want this team to look like? What do we need to accomplish organizationally as far as stocking the system and to try to figure out, once we got a sense of what the market was like, both trades and free agency, to figure out how best to take advantage of those opportunities?
I would imagine, because you guys all did work with Andrew Friedman while he was here, that there wouldn't be that much of a drastic change in baseball philosophy.
That's true. I mean, we always try to get better. We always challenge ourselves to get better. That was the case with Andrew. It's certainly the case with Matt. And, you know, it was obviously in some sense a big change. I mean, we all worked for so long with Andrew. He's meant an incredible amount to all of us as a mentor, a boss, and also a friend. At the same time, this organization's, and all organizations really, but certainly this organization is more than one or two people, and we've got just an incredible amount of people in the office, our scouts, our coaches throughout the system and the organization. It's just a tremendous group of people, a lot of people who don't get enough credit, and they're just incredible people to work with. They really care about this organization. They work tirelessly to make us better, to try to leave no stone unturned to accomplish what we want to accomplish.
All right, you guys made a trade just a couple of days ago. Erasmo Ramirez coming over from the Seattle Mariners for Mike Montgomery. You know, when I came on this team and back in 05, it seemed like we had AAA guys in the big leagues, AA guys at AAA, A-ball guys at AA. And you know, to the outside person, that might not seem like such a big deal, but I think it really does hamper the development of young guys when they're not in the proper slots. You guys bring in a guy like Ramirez now to probably plug one of the holes at the big league level, which would probably allow a guy who needs to be at AAA a little more seasoning and down the line and so on and so forth. Was that part of the thought process? Again, in addition to, I mean, the big world, to fill a hole at the big league level, but to make sure guys were still getting proper seasoning?
That was part of it. When you're in a situation like we're facing where we have a number of our pitchers down to open the season, but we do anticipate them coming back, certainly you're looking to make nice additions in the short term, and you also want guys that have a chance to fill holes longer term that you're going to be able to keep. And, you know, this is a guy with some track record at the major league level who's got ample experience starting. He's also, pitched later in games, but this is a guy that has the ability to pitch longer stints, and knowing that we're going to need to be a little creative out of the gate and having someone who's got experience doing that. He's got a pretty good arsenal of pitches, particularly his fastball, his changeup, and we like a lot of the things he does, and we're eager to see, as with everybody, we try to get the most out of them. But we're excited to have someone with experience to come in and provide meaningful innings for us.
All right, Chaim, I'm going to put you on the spot as we close this out. You and I had a chance to do a couple of things during the offseason together, and I think the consensus was that the positivity inside the organization definitely was a lot better there than it was on the outside. As you said, some people are kind of anticipating this Rays team to struggle this year. Were those thoughts maybe tempered a little bit with losing the starters? But then again, as I've said before, if you can't overcome a couple guys not being in your lineup for a few weeks or maybe a month or whatever, and maybe you weren't good enough to begin with. So I know it's the next man up kind of theory. Where do you see, if you're watching spring training, you still have the same feelings about this team that you did maybe 3 months ago?
We do. We feel good about where we are, and you never want to lose the guys that we've lost, and you don't want to lose them all at the same time. But every team has its challenges. There's no team in baseball that's not going to go through challenges this year. 1 through 30, everybody's going to go through challenges, as have we, even in our most successful years. We've weathered injuries. We've gone through, unfortunate periods where we weren't fully staffed, or we suffer some heartbreaking losses, and you have to bounce back. So we know that everybody's going to face those. Nobody's going to feel sorry for us. We also know, as confident as we felt throughout the offseason and as optimistic as we are, that we're going to have to go out and prove it, and people aren't going to give us the benefit of the doubt. And that's a challenge that that we always relish. And we enjoy defying the odds and being the underdogs. And in some sense, it's almost refreshing to be back in that seat again. But we know no one's going to give us any credit until we go out and do it. So despite some of the injuries in spring training, certainly it's going to matter. I mean, you not having those kind of guys does make a difference, but we still feel like we have a deep group here, that some guys are going to get chances to rise to the occasion, and we're optimistic that they're going to be able to do that.
That's Chaim Bloom joining us as part of our countdown to opening day show. We'll see how it all plays out, as opening day is just 4 days away. Hey, Rays up this season with the Rays Flex Packs, featuring a Rays pullover. These 3, 6, or 9 game packs offer huge savings and great rewards throughout the season. Pricing starts at just $59. Call 888-FAN-RAYS or visit RaysBaseball.com. We'll come back with more of our countdown to opening day show right after this. We're broadcasting live from the Hooters on Clearwater Beach, and you're listening to it on your home for Rays Baseball, 620 WDAE and the Rays Radio Network.
Back here on our Countdown to Opening Day Radio Show from the Hooters on Clearwater Beach with Dave Wills. I'm Andy Freed, and you just heard Chaim Bloom talk moments ago with Dave Wills about the lifeblood of the organization being the guy coming up through the minor leagues, and we always try to make time for the people that make those difficult decisions and work towards getting those guys to the major leagues. Of course, Mitch Lukovich is the director of minor league operations for the Rays, and this week he got a chance to sit down with our own Neil Solans.
Thanks, guys. Mitch, another season is around the corner now at the minor league level. Obviously, you guys got an influx of talent with all the trades that Matt made over the offseason. What have you seen here in the first 6 weeks as guys get ready to play baseball?
Well, one thing, Daniel Robertson can hit a baseball, and we're really happy to see him get acclimated along with the other young men that we acquired in trades, Boog Powell, Andrew Velasquez, certainly Jake Bowers, to mention a few. To see him get acclimated, new organization, young players, new environment, you never know how they would take to us at first, but everything's going well. Everybody's fitting in. We look forward to all of them having a good season.
You brought the majority of those to your winter development program. How much do you think that helped them get acclimated before spring training started?
Well, they all came, and they were all able to come except for Daniel Robertson. I think it's huge just for new players to meet new teammates and new staff, so when they did get here to Port Charlotte, they would feel more comfortable with their teammates, their staff, and the surroundings. So we're really happy, and that's part of what we have, why we have the Winter Development Program.
Are there similar characteristics these kids have that you brought in? Obviously, they're skilled offensively, but do they have certain maturity levels or the way they carry themselves that you've kind of noticed among the group?
Pleasingly, they are all mature, and they all love to play. These kids that we just got to go along with a lot of our, you know, signed players here, they like to play baseball, and that's huge. You never know what you're going to get, but I can say this, they like putting on the uniform, they like getting after it, and they like playing the game of baseball.
Certainly a nice match with kids who are skilled, and it's not like you didn't have kids who were skilled in the organization prior to that. You've added a certain amount of skill. I want to touch on one other kid who also was traded because it was July of last year, Willie Adames. I know he's made quite an impression with all of you.
Well, Willie has a lot of skill, and Willie has tremendous maturation for a 19-year-old. He's a, you know, Dominican-born, and the cultural change, he's right on top of it. His English is getting better with every day. And Willie's going to be an offensive-type shortstop. We're seeing him where he's able to take the ball middle out and drive it to right field, whereas when you have younger players, 19 like him, they roll over, they pull the ball, they're not able to take the ball the other way, and that's certainly a sign of a good hitter.
Indeed. And, you know, we mentioned some guys who've been in the organization. You've made some changes with a couple of them in terms of where they play in the field, or maybe not on a consistent basis in one case, but Tyler Goodell, we saw him the other day in the outfield where he's now made a move, and you've also got another guy who may play some outfield too.
Yes, Ryan Brett. You know, Ryan, since day one, a high draft pick for us, very skilled offensively, can swing the bat, a 4-1 runner from home to first. We're going to have him play a little center field, a little outfield. You know, versatility is really big for us here. And if you can play multiple positions, that's huge. And when you have the type of speed of Ryan Brett, and it gives him the flexibility. You never know when there's an opportunity to big leagues and you in the big leagues and you can play multiple positions, it might enhance his chances to get to the big leagues sooner.
And how about Tyler Goodell, who was a corner infielder? You seem to have, I wouldn't say a glut, but with guys like Patrick Leonard and Richie Schaefer, there's certainly some guys ahead of him, and obviously you've got Evan Longoria, Casey Gillespie, your first-round pick. It was kind of a made-sense type move?
It was a made-sense type move for Tyler Goodell. Sometimes, you know, the positions don't match. And sometimes, you know, what they do on defense affects them at the plate. And with Tyler, we thought the move to the outfield, right now left field, but we all think eventually he can play center field because of his speed, takes the pressure off him a little bit offensively, even though he's learning a new position. We really like what we see with Tyler in the outfield.
Speaking of things that you like, I know you're excited about some of the pitching, especially that's going to be at the low A and high A levels this year. Let's start with a kid who's gotten a lot of raves, Blake Snell, who had kind of a breakthrough last year.
Well, Blake's had a terrific spring, and you know, he's a 6'5" left-handed pitcher, which is rare because of his height, but he has a terrific fastball and good secondary pitches. Again, when he had that type of stuff, we're working on location, we're working on changing speeds, we're working on the maturation of the player, both physically and mentally, which he is coming around, and we think that Blake Snell has a bright future here.
And he's not the only one who I know you're excited about. You've got some young arms who probably will be in Bowling Green, probably will be in Port Charlotte. I know a kid, Herman Marquez, is someone you're very high on.
Yeah, Herman Marquez from Venezuela will be league age 20 in our Florida State League. And, you know, for our fans, for us, the younger, the higher, the better. And with that club, with Herman Marquez, he has a plus-plus fastball, good breaking ball, good change, and very mature for the age. But on that club, when you see Marquez, league age 20, Adames, 19, King Wong, 20, and Andrew Velasquez, 20. We're excited about that ball club. And then your mention about, you know, our Bowling Green pitching with Brent Honeywell at league age 20 there. And that staff for us is one of our better staffs that we've had for that age group with Honeywell and Anderson Franco we got in the Rule 5 draft. Henry Centeno, Greg Harris we got from the Dodgers will be league age 20 there. All that have some good stuff and some nice upside that we hope that we can continue to develop and one day help us in the major leagues.
Sounds like you've got some developing arms from your programs in Latin America, be it Dominican or Venezuela, and obviously I know that's important for you guys to be able to have pipelines from all areas.
Well, there's no doubt. You know, when you're a small market club, you need to reach out all over, and we're never going to buy players like large market clubs. Ken, so we rely on player development scouting, international, you know, player development where we have nine teams and we go around the world. But our Latin America program's getting better and better. And I think our fans in the next couple of years will start seeing those type players with our major league team.
You mentioned, you know, the pitching staffs, but it seems like you've also developed some pretty good catching throughout the system, you know, and I want to hit on that. Justin O'Connor, obviously a breakthrough last year. He wows people with his arm, but it seems like his game is coming along.
Well, as we often talked about, Justin, the maturation of a young man, a high school sign, he's mature now mentally, mature now physically, and you see that raw skill coming out. And why our scouts signed him, we're excited about O'Connor. We have Ariza, who is one of the best in baseball, like O'Connor, in throwing out runners in high A. We have our number one pick, a high school kid in Nick Schufo in Bowling Green with a fifth-round pick, Mac James, who will back him up. So we're starting to get some, you know, young men in the catching area that we have some high hopes for. And that was an area that we just didn't do as well in years past. But we're looking forward to it. Luke Maley and so forth. You know, I don't know how the outcome's going to be with our big league team with Kirk Casale, but all these guys I mentioned can one day help us in the big leagues.
Certainly nice to see depth there. And one guy who I know evolved last year at the AAA level is Mikey Matsuk, and he's a guy who's now on the 40-man roster and certainly puts himself in a better position to be able to help the big club now.
He's done everything that we've asked. He's when he came in from day one, great worker, great attitude. Maybe we start him a little bit higher, the pressure of the game, and every day, you know, wear and tear. You can come from the greatest college program. You play on weekends, and you come to us, and it's Port Charlotte Heat in the summer, it's a challenge for anybody. Next year in Double A was okay, you know, to good, but he took off in Triple A last year. You know, good defense, accurate arm, better at the plate, swinging more strikes, taking more balls, and all his hard work starting to come into play. And I think all of us here think that he can come up in some time and help us in the major leagues as well.
And from a staff standpoint, you've got some changes in terms of managerial, and all four guys managing your full-season clubs are all under 40. A lot of youth, a lot of excitement, a lot of exuberance.
Yeah. Well, you like that. Not that we want to stay away from the older guys, because we have, myself included, a lot of the older generation who have been in baseball 40-plus years, myself and Dick Bosman and Bill Evers, and certainly Father Hoff, Jim Hoff, are one of our two field coordinators. But, yes, with our staff, with, you know, Jared Sandberg at AAA and Brady Williams at AA and Michael Johns at IA and Ronaldo Ruiz are all young. They're all youthful. They have energy. And, you know, it's a young man's game. You know, so old guys can, you know, advise them. It's a young man's game. We have young staffs, and they're very enthusiastic and wonderful teachers, which that's what the minor leagues is all about.
Well, we certainly appreciate you having some time with us to discuss the whole group. Mitch, thanks for a few minutes. Best of luck this minor league season, and we look to having you on again soon.
Great, Neil. Thanks for having me.
Guys, back to you.
All right, Neil, thank you very much. Thank you to Mitch as well, and I like that he gives us a couple of guys to really watch this year as we go on this 2015 season. Well, Rays fans, we invite you to break out of the boardroom and host your next office event somewhere more exciting. Tropicana Field offers a number of group seating areas to watch the Rays with your coworkers, friends, or family. And for more information, visit RaysBaseball.com or call 888 888- Fan Raise. With Dave Wills and Neil Solons, I'm Andy Frieda. The Hooters on Clearwater Beach. When we come back, Dave sits down with the Rays opening day starter, and that is Chris Archer. Right after this, on your home for Rays baseball, 620 WDAE and the Rays Radio Network.
Well, the 2014 season was Chris Archer's first full season. Finished 10-9 with a 3-3 at the team third starts, so 195.
Impressive numbers, but he could have been better.
He estimated some of those starts he had where he had trouble with two outs in an inning, two strikes on a batter. Knows how good he might have been. And that's Chris Archer to take a look back at his 2014 campaign.
It's interesting because Clayton Kershaw obviously had less starts, but he only threw 198 innings last year and won the MVP. And obviously, per game, he threw more innings. But to be up there in the 190s, my first full season, I was – in the moment, I wasn't happy about. But, you know, looking back and reflecting on the season, I had some pretty high standards for myself, considering that it was my first start to finish season in the big leagues. And I think people tend to forget that as well. If you go back and look at any of the great pitchers currently, if you their first start to finish season, you put those numbers against theirs, and I'm right there. And there is more in the tank, and that is what motivates me, because I know the same thing. If I could limit those big innings and not have a, you know, 30-pitch inning, that allows me to get into the eighth more frequently. I only got past the seventh a handful of times last year, and the mentality here is to do that on a nightly basis, not three or four times a year, every single night you go out. Since I've already pitched nine innings multiple times, I know that I'm capable of doing that, and I know that that's my potential. And I'm also realistic enough to know that it's not going to happen every night, but getting as close as possible is going to help my team win the game. And that's the overall goal. So I want to be a part of more team wins when I'm on the mound. So I learned a lot about myself last year. I learned how good I could be. And it's encouraging.
What are your expectations for 2015? I mean, you're going to get the start. You're getting the ball on opening day. And I know that you've I don't know if the word would be downplaying it a bit, but you're trying to say that, hey, whether it's April 6th, May 6th, September 6th, it's just about there going out to try to help your team and pitch the way that you're capable of pitching. But there's got to be a little bit of excitement that you're going to get the ball on opening day.
The circumstances don't really allow me to be excited. I feel like that would be selfish. I did have a moment where I took a step back and thought about all the things that led to me pitching on April 6, 2015. And the story is quite remarkable. I didn't make my seventh grade team. I played every level in the minor leagues twice. I was traded twice. And then just the ups and downs over the course of my short big league tenure. I'm grateful for the opportunity. I'm happy that I've taken care of myself, and it kind of reiterates all the hard work that I've put in the weight room, growing myself mentally away from baseball, being conscious of what I put in my body, making sure I get that extra hour of rest for recovery. It just being honored with opening day validates all the hard work, all my failures that I've tried to do my best to translate into success.
So I would say that one of your mantras would be don't count me out, and it sounds to me like that's probably your thought process with this team too as we visit with Chris Archer. I mean, a lot of people are saying, well, this guy's gone, this guy's no longer the GM, this guy's no longer the manager, this guy's no longer there to play every day, this guy's no longer at the top of the pitching staff. But it seems to me like the energy within the clubhouse feels like we're going to prove you guys wrong.
Yeah, and it's – I think anytime you try to use outside things as motivation, you're limiting yourself to a degree. So I think it's more about proving ourselves right, proving – that Matt Silverman is equally as good and qualified, and Chaim Bloom, and all the executives that we have in line, and that they made a good decision with cash, and that the moves that we did make, whether it was releasing players or signing free agents or trading players, that we're actually stronger than we were, if totally healthy, than at the beginning of 2014. It's a completely different story now with the injuries, but I feel like the guys that we have, the reason that we have quality depth and the reason that we made moves years ago, last year with Lobaton and acquiring Andrees in the James Shields trade, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so acquiring Andrees in the James Shields trade shows why we made those moves. Because everybody wants to look on the surface. Well, it was Will Myers for James Shields. Well, no, it was way more complex than that. We just flipped Mike Montgomery for Erasmo Ramirez, who was a part of the James Shields trade. Jake Odorizzi was part of the James Shields trade. Andrees was part of the James Shields trade. And then the depth in the minor leagues that we got from it. But, you know, what I'm trying to say is we're about to show why we make the moves we make and why our fans should continue to be confident in what we're doing and the direction the club is heading in.
You know, off the field, you do as much in the community as anybody on this team. And I was reading some of the excerpts and read the whole article from Mark Topkin about you this past weekend. And you said, "I feel the reason we are put on this earth is to be a positive influence and to positively impact as many lives as possible." Not too many people wake up thinking that, much less Major League Baseball players. I mean, one of my favorite things is whenever I walk by you in the hallway, "Hey, Chris, how you doing?" I get, "I'm grand." And I've even kind of stolen that now to use it with other people. But it's something that you truly, truly believe in.
Yeah. I know that I was fortunate to have selfless people positively influence my life. And I wouldn't be where I'm at today without that influence. So I don't know if I'll ever impact one person as much as, you know, my parents and my mentor directly impacted me. But hopefully I can sprinkle positivity everywhere, and that it changes the way people look at their life. Just like with the grand thing, I think we get caught up in saying, "Oh, I'm good." And then good becomes a baseline. So I try to use something that actually describes more than just mediocrity. And life is grand. Life is great. Life is wonderful. And for me, if that helped you think about your day, because what you do is there's nothing more, I'm sure, that you would want to do with your life. So calling it good is actually a disservice. But calling it grand is actually saying, my life is grand. Mm-hmm. Even on a bad day, you know, there's people wishing that they had that bad day or that issue, that struggle. So I feel like if I can have that small effect on and just kind of change the way we think about our day, then I'm doing what I'm here to do.
And if you want some nice little nuggets on a daily basis, you can go to Chris's Twitter site at ChrisArcher42, and you usually find a little somebody, make somebody smile, a couple other things down the line. You've done a lot of things, as we said, off the field, the good sports equipment drive, the trip to South Africa. You're working with the Boys and Girls Clubs, Big Brothers, Big Sisters, All Children's Hospital, which, again, is all those kind of cuddly-feely kind of stories about a big leaguer helping the community. One thing that I noticed, though, you do spend some time at the Pinellas County Juvenile Detention Center, and you know, it's one of those things where a kid that's behind bars or in a situation like he's in looks at you and says, "Well, what do you know? You're making a lot of money. You're driving nice cars." What they don't know is that it always wasn't smooth sailing on the way to where you're at right now.
Right. We all have struggles and adversity growing up in life. Others are greater. But, you know, I really don't talk about myself that much. I do say, "Hey, I made some stupid mistakes, stupid decisions. I just happen not to get caught." So you're not any different than I am. I'm not any different than you are in that sense. You guys just got caught for the vandalism, or, you know, some of the cases are much more extreme than that. But I try to shine light on some historical figures like Nelson Mandela. He was in prison for 28 years and he became president. So it doesn't matter what obstacles in front of you. If somebody can be in prison for 28 years and become president of their country, whatever's in front of you is nothing in comparison. So I try to shine some light on some different historical figures that have overcome adversity and obstacles, like I said. And when people hear that, even if it's just for that split second, it helps them. And from that point on, it's your choice. And that's what I try to tell them. You know, you guys are at a critical age. You know, you're 15, 16. These things can be expunged from your record, and you can go on and be a successful business person. I'll never go in there and tell them that they're going to become a professional athlete, because the odds of that is so slim. I don't want to go in there and be unrealistic, but they can accomplish their goals just like this person did in history, this person did in history, I did. You can become a professor and come back to the juvenile detention center in your suit that you wear to work every day, and your story is going to be greater than mine. You're going to be more relatable to these children than I am to you. So I try to make them, you know, hold themselves accountable at 15. You can change your thinking now, and it's all about choice, decision making. And I think coming from an athlete, they're open to hearing this information. And again, that's part of my service to this world.
And part of your service to this world is also the Archway Foundation. Can you kind of give us, in a nutshell, what you're trying to accomplish through that?
To empower the youth. The number one thing that we do is we have two baseball teams. That's like a travel select type team. And these things are very expensive these days. We don't ask for anything monetary from them or their parents. All we ask is for them to follow these guidelines. And if they keep a certain amount of points per month, they're eligible to play. If they don't have enough points, they're not eligible. Ways to gain points are making your bed, helping your parents with the dishes, your grades. And also we have a summer reading list and report that they have to do on these readings. They can earn more points for reading and doing a report than making their bed. But we're trying to develop young men, and we're trying to empower the youth so that – we're changing the world, but they're the ones who are ultimately going to be the change in the world.
What are you reading right now?
I just finished Thinking Fast and Slow. Matt Silverman actually required all of the vice presidents to read it in the Rays franchise. So reading it really opened my mind to how business works. And then on top of that, how and why we make decisions. So it helped me on the field. It helped me understand the business aspect of the Rays more. And it also helped me understand why other people make the decisions that they make. So I'm more patient and non-judgmental of why they make their decisions.
All right, as we close it out too, we got something that's happening here in a little more in the near future, the Bowl for Kids' Sake. I know, again, that's something that you're a part of with the Boys and Girls Club. Right now, halfway to the goal of $330,000. I was looking it up yesterday, so you guys are pretty close to halfway. What are some of the things you're trying to do with that?
They asked me to kind of take over for David Price as a spokesperson, and the program, the organization is near to my heart because I had a mentor growing up, and that's what the program's all about, mm-hmm. being a big brother, big sister / mentor to a child. So anything that I can do, if I can use my platform to help that organization, I'm going to do it. So if it's sending out a couple of tweets or signing some autographs at the VIP party that's on Friday night, April 3rd, I'm going to do it. So hopefully we raise the goal. I know that I'm not as big of a name as David Price in the community, but hopefully we can get as close to the goal as possible. And if not, you know, it's $30,000 or $40,000 that they didn't have.
Well, it's more than that. I think it's about $150,000 right now. So you're getting there, so good job. And again, for more information, we'll talk about it here in just a little bit, but also go to @ChrisArcher42 on his Twitter site, and he'll have more information about that. All right, can you beat David in bowling?
He's extremely competitive.
But you are too.
I'm very competitive in baseball. When it comes to the outside things, it doesn't really bother me to lose. And that's what I find interesting about, like, the Kobe Bryants and the Michael Jordans. They take that into golf, and they take it into everything. I only apply it to the thing that I'm good at. I can recognize that I'm not a good bowler. I would never bet on myself to – bowl well. But when it comes to pitching and executing pitches, I would bet on myself 99.9% of the time.
And so would we. And, again, thanks to Chris for taking time to join us about a number of his endeavors, both on and off the field. And looking forward to seeing Chris on opening day Monday afternoon against the Baltimore Orioles. Hey, we're getting ready for another exciting season of Rays baseball. Purchase your 2015 ticket plan. Locations, choose from a variety of plans, and don't miss a minute of the fun with Rays baseball. For ticket plan information, visit RaysBaseball.com or call 888-FAN-RAYS. And Andy Fried, we got just a couple of minutes left before we have to say goodbye from Hooters here on Clearwater Beach. But as we prep for opening day on Monday, one more home game for the spring, and that'll be on Saturday afternoon. It's a 12:35 start at the Trop. So if you're looking for something to do this Saturday, we'll be at the Trop, 12:35 against the Detroit Tigers.
Yeah, and then that's it. And then Sunday off, and then Monday it's for real. 3:10, the Rays and the Orioles. Chris Tillman for Baltimore, Chris Archer for the Rays. Something to, as we kind of put a little bow on spring training here, you know, the Rays today allowed only one run to the Phillies, a lineup that had Chase Utley and Ryan Howard and this Odubel Herrera guy who is suddenly one of the hot guys of spring training. The Rays at this point in spring training have the second best earned run average in Major League Baseball at 3.13. And what makes you feel optimistic about that is that's the kind of thing the Rays are going to have to do this year to be successful. I was just reading one of the predictions of the American League East, and the writer said, I can't figure out a pathway for the Rays to win the division. They said that in 2008, too. They've said that other years. I wouldn't take that stuff to heart. I could paint a picture for each one of these five teams to win or finish in last.
Yeah, I agree. I think I go back to a couple of years ago when you talk about 2013. I think that's the way we kind of looked at 2013, where it's going to be that close where a team that could be five games out might finish in fourth or fifth place. I don't see a team running away. I didn't see a team running away last year either until Baltimore did at the very, very end. But Baltimore, again, they're a solid team, but they're going to miss some key pieces early on. A lot of teams in the American League East are missing some key pieces as they get this season started. And at the end of the day, I'll say it again until I'm blue as this shirt, the team that pitches the best wins the American League East. That's what I think.
And I feel good about the fact that the injuries, and you were talking to Kyle Bloom about it, the fact that Cobb, Smiley, and Colomé should all be back within a couple of weeks. And so let's see if this team can hold things together through the month of April.
Let's hope they do. By the way, in the devotion to accuracy department, we meant to say, when we were talking with Chris, he was talking about Matt Andrees, the James Shields trade. Sorry, I should have corrected Chris right there. Didn't feel like I wanted to right there, but it was in the Alex Torres deal, where we sent Alex Torres to the Padres and picked up, among others, Matt Andrees and Brad Boxberger. Well, we'll see you Saturday.
Let's
we'll be
do
broadcasting
it.
That game beginning at 11:30 with Neil Solon's pregame show, so that's Saturday. Don't forget about that. Our executive producers of Rays Baseball are Mark Fernandez and Larry McCabe, our producer Chris Miller, our associate producers Jordan Cabiellis and also Chris Marasco. Thanks to Pat Donovan for taking care of business back at our studios in Tampa, and thanks to the folks here at Hooters on Clearwater Beach for their hospitality. We also want to thank our guests here today, Chris Archer, Heim Bloom, and Mitch Lukovich. Now for Andy Fried and Neil Solons, I'm Dave Wills, thanking you for listening, and hope to see you at the Trop on Monday when the Rays open the season against the Orioles. Good night, everybody. This is your home for Rays Baseball, 620 WDAE and the Rays Radio Network.
Thank you for listening to Countdown to Opening Day.
Swing and a line drive toward right center. This could be trouble. Kiermaier reaches up and makes the catch. Kevin Kiermaier makes the grab to take away extra bases and keep the Rays in the lead. Oh, my!
If you missed any of the show, download it at RaysBaseball.com/podcast.
1-2. Now the pitch. Got him swinging and the ball game is over as Jake McGee strikes out the side in the ninth inning.
Join us for opening day on April 6th as the Rays host the Baltimore Orioles. For tickets, visit RaysBaseball.com.